Welcome to This Green Earth, a weekly talk show on and about the environment, our relationships with it, and most importantly, our impacts upon it. I'm Chris Cherniak. Now, Larson is away this week, and joining me in the studio, as he typically does a few times each year, is Brian McInerney. Brian is a senior hydrologist with the National Weather Service out of Salt Lake City, and he's here actually perhaps for the final time as an employee with the National Weather Service. We'll get to that later, right? Because you're kind of you're wrapping things up there.
There's no
it's like you've done all you could with the weather.
Yeah,
I'm out of here.
It's time.
So, well, like I say, we'll get to that because you have some plans and some ideas going forward in your next chapter of your career. But we want to talk about weather, climate-related issues like we typically do, and we try to look back to the past season and how things unfolded, temperature and precipitation-wise. So that means autumn. And for autumn, the Weather Service typically goes by September, October, and November as they define the seasons.
Yep.
Okay. So how did we do with respect to say temperature and precipitation, say across the state of Utah?
I think if we look at the entire process, it was pretty much average as far as temperature goes. We didn't have any of those really long hot spells. And we had periodic storm activity. If we look, we had about four significant events. If we look in October, the first storm event that occurred was this dry continental air mass that came down from the Arctic and produced some precipitation, but it was bitterly cold, record-breaking cold.
Oh, yeah. Remember that.
Yeah, below if you remember, the little kids were running around in their Halloween costumes when it was really frigid cold, and that was due to the jet stream. The high pressure kind of elongated. So as the flow came off the Pacific, it hit the high, went straight north into the Arctic, went up and around the high, and then came straight down on us. And it was a very an anomalous pattern, and that's what brought that cold weather. And what it did was it dusted the mountains with this snow layer that's been dogging the avalanche community ever since. Because after that, we had about 5 weeks of high pressure, incredibly bad air quality down in Salt Lake, absence of storms. And then we moved into a couple of nice patterns where we had some nice powder snow and started picking up the flow. I think the thing to note is that we have not been dominated by high pressure ridging over the western U.S. We've had consistent flow patterns that have come off the Pacific, and that's brought our snowpack. Here in Park City, it's currently 108% of median, and that's only going to increase when we have this next weather system move in starting Wednesday morning and going through Saturday. So things in as far as the water supply look and the skiing, we're doing really well as far as this year. If we look down in the Virgin, they're at 207% of median, and then in the Duchesne is 144%, and that's due to these atmospheric river events that came in, these narrow shots of moisture that are really good producers of precipitation and snow. So overall, very good. And I'll stop talking from there.
Because
I do this frequently with
you. Know
you,
what
sorry.
You just did, as always.
We can, chat about
you have
all
a rich
this, so.
History. We can just play some more Washed Out
right.
for the next
sorry,
10
man.
Minutes since you answered all my questions.
I get going and it just flows when I start thinking about this stuff.
Atmospheric river. You're literally an atmospheric river
right.
of information.
Yes,
all
thank
right.
you.
All right, so that... But the takeaway here, temperatures were rather average. Precipitation, generally, you know, with exceptions here or there, was rather average for the season, for the all autumn season, we'll say.
Yeah.
And now, and the reservoirs are looking good, and the snowpack is also pretty good.
Yeah, if you
above average, we'll say.
If you look at the end of our runoff from last year, we erased all traces of drought designation for Utah. We had some of the worst drought designations in the entire country following 2018, which was the driest year on record. 2019 came in and we had a really nice runoff, and we were absent of any drought. Then we had the summer come and we didn't have much of a monsoonal flow. And then drought started to creep back into the picture. And right now we have a good chunk of Utah is under some abnormally dry and some higher level drought designations. If these storms continue, that's going to go away. But as far as our reservoirs go, we're still doing quite well compared to what we had in 2018 in the dry summer we just experienced.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about something interesting that occurred down in St. George with respect to their precipitation records or occurrences. You saw a real difference in average for and intensities or dry weather and also wet weather.
Yeah. When you look at St. George and you say, how did you do in water year 2018? They were the second wettest water year on record down there. And you think that's great. But then you look at the summer months, this end of the spring, the summer months and the fall, and they went 155 days consecutively without any measurable precip at all. And then you think
five months.
Yeah, 155 days.
Without
any precip at all. Yet they had the second wettest water year. And that's due to the intensity of the winter storms that came through there were incredible. And then the flow just shut off for them and they went dry for 155 days. So if you were just to look at the data, you'd think something's wrong here. How can you have a second wettest water year? But if you look at the science of where we're headed as far as precipitation goes, the storms are less frequent, but when they get here, they're very intense. And we're seeing that right now. And St. George had that, where instead of storms coming off the Pacific being more of a spray, I think of a nozzle on a hose giving it a nice spray moving back and forth. Mm-hmm. This was, you concentrated the flow, shot it right at that area, and it's due to these atmospheric river events. And then the flow shifted northward, and they didn't see anything for 155 days.
They're a pretty dry, arid environment to begin with. So it's not unusual for them to go 30 or 50 or 70 days without precipitation?
Yeah.
So 155 is a big difference.
Big difference. And usually what you see in the wintertime down there are these big low pressures that come off the Pacific down by Baja and produce these big rain events over time. Or you get a monsoonal flow that comes up from the Pacific through Mexico, and you get thunderstorm activity, which produces a lot of flash flooding. They really didn't see any of that, and it was due to the lack of monsoonal flow, and then the jet stream was far north during this entire time.
So this is what you've been talking about as an example of a changing climate that we're going to be experiencing, that, again, temperatures, yeah, it's going to get warmer. Precipitation is always kind of variable, tough to get your finger on exactly whether we're going to be a drier or a wetter world. But you've always said, you know, this is for the 20 years that you've been coming on this show or so, that it's the intensity of storms and frequency of storms that we're going to see as an expression of climate change. And this is an example of that?
This is a really good example of that. This is what you'd expect to see. And when you look at southern Utah, the variability of storms has always been somewhat high compared to northern Utah. Now northern Utah, we're seeing that variability increase. We used to get storms coming off of the Pacific Northwest out of Alaska on a regular basis. They would show up, they would produce a certain amount of snow, and then they'd move on and we'd get another one maybe a week or 3 or 4 days, something in that range. Now what you see is longer periods of high pressure dominating the weather with the absence of storm activity to be followed by very intense winter storms that produce a lot of snow in a short period of time. It's good for the skiers for powder, but it's bad for the avalanche conditions, but it's also keeps the water managers up at night because they go from very dry conditions to a lot of rain, a lot of snow, which then changes reservoir operations. And a good example of this was 2017. We had 5 years of drought, 2012 to 2016. 2017 arrived. And within 2 months' time, they went from storing as much water as they could to dumping as much water as they could because they didn't have room for all this runoff that was coming. And it changed in a two-month period, and that's what's a little difficult to plan for.
Well, and what keeps you up at night, particularly during the summers, are flash flood alerts and potentials.
Yeah.
And again, that's an expression of these very more intense storms. And you're going to see probably the potential for flash flood alerts and stuff, that trending up too.
Yeah. Again, this monsoonal flow we saw this past summer was very weak. We didn't see much of anything. But if you just go back a few years, you see some of the largest flash floods we've ever seen since I've been doing this for 30 years. We had one thunderstorm complex that killed 21 people in the Hilldale polygamous area.
Right.
And then that same thunderstorm moved into Zion National Park and killed 7 canyoneering people. And then a guy drove through it that night. 21 people from one thunderstorm complex. It's incredibly stressful to know that these thunderstorms are bearing down on people that are recreating down there and really don't understand how dangerous this can be. And it's getting worse as we increase our temperatures. For every degree C, you increase atmospheric moisture by 7%. And then the next degree C, you raise it, it's like compound interest. The atmosphere just gets that much more wet. And then you have very large thunderstorms, intense thunderstorms that you really don't see statistically.
And when I say it keeps you up at night, because you're the guy that's got your finger on the button effectively,
yeah,
to send out those flash flood alerts. But you have to be mindful about not overdoing it, right? And crying,
yeah,
wolf,
yeah,
in a sense. You got to get it right.
Yeah.
And people will say, well, just be conservative and be precautionary and just send out alerts all the time. You know, if the probability is even 30%, just to be safe. But then that puts into that can result in a sense of what's the point? It never happens anyway, so I'm not going to believe this flash flood alert.
Yeah,
we'll be fine.
Yeah, and that's you have to be mindful of that.
Yeah,
you can't be crying wolf because people won't change their behavior. These guys just put these warnings out all the time. We're not going to worry about it. But you don't want to miss them. So you got to get it right, which adds stress to the job. And the person who takes my job when I retire is going to have a much more difficult time with this new atmosphere.
Yeah, because it's going to be in play,
yeah,
much more often.
Right.
And the avalanche community goes through the same thing, too. They have to be mindful, I'm sure, about how they initiate alerts.
Yeah.
And the different degrees of alerts they initiate.
Right.
Right. So, okay, so that's how things are going. So our watersheds are pretty healthy.
Mm-hmm.
Our snowpack is good, except for the avalanche conditions or so.
Yeah.
The weather going forward, I'll say it, you don't have to. The 6 to 10 day forecast that NOAA put out simply for temperatures shows that the next 6 to 10 days will be below average with respect to temperatures. So it's going to continue to be pretty fairly cold. And we got a fairly robust shot of snow coming through late tonight and through tomorrow.
Yeah.
So our snow conditions are looking pretty good. Last 5 minutes or so.
Okay.
Let's talk about what your next steps are. And by the way, if you just joined us, we're speaking with Brian McInerney. He is a senior hydrologist with the National Weather Service down in Salt Lake City. Brian has been joining us for I think you've been coming on the show for like 10 years or so and giving us updates just like you are today on weather conditions and climate conditions. And you're retiring soon.
Mm-hmm.
And how many years would that be?
30 years.
30 years.
Yeah.
Can you have some takeaways from 30 years with the National Weather Service as far as management and operations thereof, but how the National Weather Service has changed over those times?
Yeah. Working for the National Weather Service for me was a gift because you do all sorts of really cool science. You get a lot of assistance, technical assistance, and I was given autonomy to build this program. When I got there wasn't a hydrology program in that office. I was a new guy, and they just kind of gave me free rein to figure it out. And then over that time, I've just had a blast working this job, from snow hydrology to skiing in the mountains to flash flood down in southern Utah, to get to know all the park people, all the grand staircase people, and then learn about desert hydrology and how flash floods work. I was also able to work on wildfires and post-wildfire debris flows. And then for that job, you get to fly around in helicopters and hike around with the fire people, and that was fun. So it's cyclical, depending what time of year. So it didn't get boring. I stayed at the Salt Lake office for 30 years because I live in Park City. And the skiing is just so good here. I thought, you're not going to find anything better.
That's what I hear.
Right?
Yeah.
So really, it was a gift of a career to have that I felt fortunate that I was able to get this job.
Right.
But 30 years, you're kind of, I'm 59 now. I'll be turning 60 next year. So it's time to go ski more. It's time to go ride my bike more. And then I started a nonprofit.
Right.
With some professors at the University of Utah called the Utah Climate Project to educate people on what's going to happen with Utah on climate change and what does that mean and how we can adapt to it. I don't think we're going to get out of this, but we can prolong it and we can adapt so we can get ready for what's coming. Because what we found was a lot of the research is in published journals that are very sciencey and very statistic-like. People can't read them. So how about if we take that and make it plain language and then educate the people of Utah on what you're going to expect with this? Because we found over time, people would be astonished that we would just explain it to them in ways that they could understand, and they really like that. So why don't we do this for the masses of Utah? And that's the game plan. We'll see.
Right. So, well, not unlike what we try to do here on the show, and when you come on, you're trying to take science and verbalize it in a way that is understandable to me and the listening audience and resonates with us.
Yeah.
And then, therefore, we feel educated about what's going on, why it's happening. This is why it's happening. And this is the potential consequences associated with these changes that are going on.
Yeah.
So is that... A sense of what
the mission
is. Yeah,
and then here's some strategies that you might want to try to help with your farm or help with your ranch or to educate the water communities,
right.
What you can expect in the future.
That
in plain
adaptation.
Language. And then be there to answer questions back and forth. That's our goal. And we have a really good brain trust with the professors at the University of Utah. They had a survey that went out, and 80 professors said that they would like to become involved with more of this subject matter and see what they can do. So that was what we saw a need, and we saw a group of really smart people that wanted to become involved.
Right.
So that's where we're headed.
80 professors, that's good luck with that.
That was the survey. We'll see how it shakes out.
And sometimes, you know, with all due respect to professors, they can be a little complicated in their communication skills.
That's
the challenge. You need to
get
reach into the communication department, too, and the sustainability department, too, and dig into that as the literature department and so the environmental humanities and things. They all play a role. So, all right, so that's your potential next step.
Yep.
All right.
And we'll see how it goes.
And of course, you're always welcome to come on the show.
Okay.
And continue to talk about weather and climate, and so we won't see you here. This is it, and this is fitting. It's the end of the decade too.
Yeah. Right. How about that?
Wrap things up. Yeah. And so this decade, would you say, was probably one of the warmer decades in your 30 years? Three decades that you
warmer and drier.
Warmer and drier. You even said, I believe July was the warmest month, not just the warmest July, but the warmest month globally.
Globally ever.
Ever recorded.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And more than likely, I hope I've made a stretch, maybe a bit of a stretch. I said 2019 will probably go down more than likely as the second warmest year globally.
Yeah.
On record, since records have been kept.
Yeah, we're not done. So we'll once they
crunch
the numbers, we'll see.
Yeah,
but
it's heading in that direction. And we're going to talk with Walt Meyer with the National Snow and Ice Data Center in a little bit, and he's going to talk to us about the impacts that a warmer world is having on the Arctic, in particular sea ice. And where the trends and observations are leading there, both in the Arctic, and he has some information on the Antarctic too. But Brian, thanks as always for joining us.
Yep. Thanks always for the invite.
And you're welcome to hang out for the second half of the show when we talk to Walt. But website, pitch the website.
Weather.gov, and you'll find a forecast for your location, and you can find all sorts of good stuff on climate and some of the hydrology. If you're looking strictly for rivers and reservoirs, CBRFC, for Colorado Basin River Forecast Center. They do a great job with all of the hydrology and all of the rivers and snow. You can find a lot of snow information as to where we are, percent of normal, on CBRFC.
CBRFC.gov?
Gov.
Okay.
do a search on CBRFC,
yeah,
and then it'll be the first one that comes up.
All right, buddy.
Yep.
Thanks again. Let's take a break for a couple of underwriters, and when we come back, like I say, we'll speak with Walt Meyer with the National Snow and Ice Data Center. It's This Green Earth. We'll be right back.